Rick. Wow, this magically appeared while my eyes were closed. That's pretty awesome. Wow, good service in this place. Oh, one thing I wanted to mention before I start the sermon, actually, is last night, Craig and I got to go to a surprise birthday party for Rita Hanen. Dwayne and Rita Hanen are the leaders of Broomtree Ministries that provide pastoral retreats for pastors in full-time ministry, and I'm on the board of Broomtree Ministry, and Craig and I have helped host these pastor retreats that they run. And what was cool was, I think it was actually the February before last, they came to a Tuesday night prayer service, and we prayed for them, and at the time, they said, we've never been prayed for like that before. And we got a note from them a couple months later saying how much those prayers had impacted them and how they were still going through them. Because so many of you came that night having prayed in advance with words that you had for them, verses that you had for them, and it was so encouraging. So Craig and I are sitting having dinner, and one of their grandkids, you know, they have grandkids and great-grandkids, and one of their grandkids couple is sitting opposite us with their two little kids. And in conversation, they were like, oh, are you from that church? That so impacted them. They've never been prayed for like that before. Your church is awesome. So I just wanted to bring that back to you because it was just so encouraging to hear. You guys pray like nobody else prays. So keep it up. Keep going. So it's awesome. So what do you need to do to stay healthy? We had a wellness group this spring. So what do you need to do to keep yourself healthy? Eat well. What else? Exercise. Yeah. Get enough sleep. Ding, 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 ding. Yeah, so often we think of things like eat well, exercise, quit smoking, have healthy relationships, healthy finances, but that sleep one, we tend to forget, right? By the way, I have a PowerPoint. There we go. Yeah, okay. So this Rest Rebellion series that we're doing, it was originally going to be 3 weeks. And the basic premise is we're a restless society. We're very driven, our lives are full, very busy, hectic, packed, productive. Not really as in what Jesus was offering when he said, I have come that they may have life and have it to the full. That wasn't what Jesus meant. We're certainly good at living full lives, aren't we? Too often that full life means juggling a crazy schedule, surviving that treadmill of extra hours at work, and burning that proverbial candle at both ends, trying to pack it all in. That's not what Jesus meant when he offered us a full life. The NIV translates those words in John 10:10, life to the full. But the ESV is a little different. It says, I came that they may have life and have it abundantly. Abundantly, abundant life. Jesus wants to offer us an abundant life, full of rich relationships with him and with other people, full of meaning, a satisfying life. Have you ever been to, any of you ever been to Token Creek? To the Elma and Edna Culver Conservancy specifically. Have any of you ever been there? You can go down to the water, and it's really beautiful, by the way. I highly recommend it. There's a little hiking trail. But you can go down and see the springs coming up. The water literally comes out of the hillside, out of nowhere. And you can see the bubbles coming up and the springs. It's really cool. And to me, that's a picture of what Jesus is offering us. He's offering us this spring of life bubbling up in a never-ending stream. We settle for a warm bottle of soda ready to explode at any moment. So one of the ways that God calls us to live a truly full life rather than just an overstuffed life, overstuffed is for furniture, guys, is by enjoying the gift of rest. He made us to rest. He made us to enjoy rest. Everything functions best, doesn't it, when you use it according to the original design? If you use a washing machine to wash dishes, you're going to get broken dishes. If you use a dishwasher to wash clothes, they're probably not going to get, I've never tried it, so I don't know, but I'm guessing that it's not going to work real well. Life goes better when we rest because we were designed to work best when our work is interspersed with periods of rest. So we've had three sermons on rest. Sarah talked about how we need seasons of rest, a rhythm of rest in our lives. And one example of that is the sabbatical that Craig is taking. Dustin Carles is also on sabbatical. This is not just a pastor, a religious professional thing. He's on a sabbatical from Epic. And you can take a sabbatical from one part of your life. Sarah and Darcy are going to be taking sabbaticals this fall from their role in women's ministry. And then Jerry talked about how we need daily rest. And of course, daily times one-on-one to interact with God, to read the Bible, to pray. But also just brief moments, even throughout the day, when we pause and remember, oh yeah, that's right, God, that's who you are. And that's who I am in relation to you as your precious child. And it puts whatever we're dealing with in perspective. And then last week, Ryan explained how we can benefit from Sabbath rest as Christians. It isn't about following a specific set of rules about what you can and can't do on a particular day of the week, but it's about setting aside a day to worship God with the community of believers and take a break from work to refresh our souls. So that was going to be it. But then we got to talking about this rest thing, and Ryan said that he's been asking people what they do to rest. And most people, it might have been everyone, says, sleep. I just sleep to rest. And I was thinking about all the people I've talked to over the years who've said, you know, I really can't rest. I sit down to rest and I just nod off. So, and then the local paper last week had this is the cover article for their health supplement, Good Night Sleep. So apparently this is a thing, right? So we decided to extend the series one more week to include a sermon on sleep, because if we have a full night's sleep, we will have days full of life. And it happens to fall on Father's Day, which is absolutely perfect, isn't it? Because we always encourage Dad to take a nap on Father's Day. So Craig told me that I needed to start a joke because Father's Day shouldn't be all serious. He said, guys don't like to be serious all the time. So here you go. I managed to find one on sleep. After my second year in medical school, I moved back home. One night I was up late studying for my clinical exam. Because my father woke me every morning at 7, I put a note on my door, do not disturb, studying until 3 a.m. Dad, a doctor himself, showed no sympathy. He left a note attached to mine. The hotel management hopes you're enjoying your stay. We'd like to remind you that checkout was at noon, approximately 6 years ago. Thank you. Sleep is such an important part of rest. Sleep is one part of rest. God intends sleep to be a major source of rest in our lives, but also adequate sleep allows us to enjoy other kinds of rest in the way that God intends. You can enjoy resting fully awake and aware if you aren't so sleep deprived that whenever you sit down, you just can't keep your eyes open. You don't have to do very much research on sleep to discover that we've got a problem. As a nation, we are majorly sleep deprived. And the statistics are pretty shocking, to be honest. Most adults need between 7 to 9 hours a night. There are a few outliers. There are a few people who need less or who need more, but the vast majority of human beings need between 7 to 9 hours a night. In the 1950s, the average American slept 8 hours a night, right in the middle. Now, the average is, does anybody want to guess? 6.5, yep, 6.5. In 60 years, biologically, our need for sleep hasn't changed, so that adds up to a huge sleep deficit. Some sources say 1 in 3 people are sleep deprived, some say 1 in 5. So that means somewhere between 20 and 33% of people on your morning commute are in danger of falling asleep. So who got a good night's sleep last night? Okay, look around. No, keep your hands up. Look around. Okay, these are your designated drivers. Hand them your keys now. Actually, though, the consequences of sleep deprivation are pretty shattering. They're pretty significant. You know, we've all felt it at some point. I mean, however good a sleeper you are generally, you're going to have some time, some period, some nights, whatever, that you don't sleep for whatever reason. And we've all felt that lethargic, that difficulty concentrating, generally being a little bit crabby, and maybe a little bit headachey. But we're going to rattle through some of the consequences of sleep deprivation. So long-term sleep deprivation increases risk of being overweight, because when you're tired, you're looking for that pick-me-up, a boost of energy, usually in the form of sugar. Over time, sleep deprivation increases your risk of high blood pressure, heart problems, stroke, diabetes, and cancer, all those chronic health problems. It actually adversely affects your athletic or physical performance, because our bodies need restorative sleep, restorative rest to work properly. Sleep deprivation adversely affects our memories. Our, you get it? I thought that was cute. Yeah. attentiveness, academic performance in the short term, and actually in the long term, it increases risk of dementia and Alzheimer's. Our brains need restorative sleep to work properly. Sleep deprivation causes grumpiness and moodiness, which strains relationships, and it makes conflict more likely. We're just not fun to be around when we're sleep deprived. My relational advice for the morning, if you're struggling in your marriage or in some other relationship, try getting more sleep. Sleep deprivation makes us more vulnerable to abuse of alcohol or other drugs, because we're just looking for something to get us going, and we should be getting that from sleep. Sleep deprivation is responsible for a huge number of road accidents. There's all these statistics from the National Highway Traffic Safety Commission, which I practice saying. Which says that every year drowsy drivers are responsible for 100,000 accidents, 71,000 injuries, and 1,500 fatalities. Every day, 80,000 people fall asleep at the wheel at some point, and this is just in America. Inadequate sleep causes 33% of railroad accidents. I don't know who gets these statistics, but I'm just passing them along, because, yeah. And 15,000 medical mistakes annually. It might be, when you're running through, you're going to have surgery, running through your list of questions with the doctor, one of them might want to be, and how much sleep do you usually get? Tragedies like the Exxon Valdez in 1989 that leaked 11 million gallons of crude oil, and I purposely did not show any of the pictures of the beaches and the wildlife that it affected, because to me, they're very traumatic. But that was caused because apparently the pilot had only had 6 hours sleep in the last 48, and he made a mistake. The Korean Airlines crash in 1997, 228 of 254 passengers died. The pilot was sleep deprived. And these are just examples. So on a spiritual level, sleep deprivation makes us vulnerable, doesn't it? In Genesis 25, we read that Esau came in from working in the field so exhausted that he sold his birthright for some stew, because he needed something to get him going. In Deuteronomy, the Amalekites attacked the Israelites when they were weary. In 2 Samuel 17, Ahithophel offered to pursue and kill David on behalf of Absalom when David was weary and discouraged, because he knew that he'd be an easier target then. Unfortunately, his plan didn't work. But my point is that it's just easier to make stupid decisions and to be more vulnerable to the enemy's lies and deceit when we're tired. So the bottom line here is we need sleep. It seems counterintuitive. On one hand, it just seems like sleep is the ultimate waste of time. We accomplish nothing when we sleep, and we sleep a third of our lives. Good grief, that's crazy. Couldn't we just train ourselves to be more efficient and sleep less? But the answer is no. We can't. The time we spend sleeping allows us to make the most of the time when we're awake. God designed us to need sleep, and we function best when we get enough. One of the problems is that we've elevated busyness and made it a virtue. It's this kind of badge of honor to be busy. If we're busy, we're important. Our lives are worthwhile. It probably means we're successful. And if we have a full social life, it probably means that people like us, because we're probably good people and we feel validated. But that's all just us trying to feel good about ourselves. If you've been around New Crossing for a while, you've heard us talk about wanting to be a simple church and wanting us to enjoy being simple Christians. We want the world to see that following Jesus means living a full, as in abundant life, not just an overstuffed, over-obligated life. Part of being a simple Christian is getting enough sleep. I read a book several years ago called The Life You've Always Wanted by John Ortberg. It's a particularly refreshing book about spiritual disciplines, all the things that we do to help us learn and grow and become more like Christ and live out our Christian faith. Things like prayer and reading the Bible and worship and being in Christian community, gratitude, all that. And in this book, the author points out that these spiritual disciplines are not ends in themselves. They have no value in and of themselves. Spiritual disciplines are tools. So praying and reading your Bible each morning just so that you can check it off your list and say that you met your religious obligation does you absolutely no good, unless it helps you know God and grow closer to Him and become more of who He created you to be. So John Ortberg defines a spiritual discipline as anything that brings you closer in relationship with God and that helps you become who He intended you to be. Because God intended us to be more like Him, right? He intended us to be loving and patient and kind and forgiving and compassionate and all those things. Those are all good things. They're all really hard things. And they're all almost impossible when you're sleep deprived. Sometimes we get so frustrated with ourselves because we just can't be more like Christ. We repent, we pray, we maybe get some counseling, we read books on anger management or whatever it is that we're trying to get a handle on and not be like, right? But perhaps what we really need is a good night's sleep. So one of my favorite lines from the book is at the top of page 50, and it says, for some of you reading this book right now, perhaps the single most spiritual thing you could do right now is to put it down and take a nap. Isn't that great? Taking a nap can be spiritual. Great news. You know, I used to often just get 6 or 7 hours of sleep. I had kids, we'd started a church, I did freelance work. I often did the freelance work after the kids went to bed. The specifics of your life might be different, but I'm sure you can relate. All the things that I did were far more important than sleep. But then God gave me a gift. He gave me the gift of migraines. And I know that sounds weird, but the only thing that I've been able to figure out that is a trigger for a migraine for me is sleep deprivation. If I get less than 8 hours a night, it's an almost automatic migraine. And I feel like it's a gift because now I have to get more sleep. And I feel like God was showing me that all the things that I do just aren't so very important. I'm not so very important. Yes, I'm loved and I'm precious to God, His beloved daughter. But He loves me not for all the things that keep me awake that I accomplish. He loves me just for who I am. So, what keeps you awake? There are lots of things that keep us awake, and some of them are temporary. We all, as I said, we all have nights or seasons when we can't get enough sleep for a whole variety of reasons. Seasons are inevitable. It's when seasons become a lifestyle that we're in trouble. So there's physical things, things like sleep apnea or hormones. Actually, there was someone in this church who wasn't sleeping. They even came to a prayer service and asked for prayer for sleep, went to their doctor, found out their hormone levels were low, started taking some pills, ba-boom, sleep. So there can be physical things, restless leg, pain. My goodness, if you've got a pain issue, that can make it very difficult to sleep. The environment, you know, if you live somewhere that's noisy, if it's light, that's especially difficult for shift workers when you have to sleep when it's light. Just your bedtime routine. You know, there's this thing called sleep hygiene. Have you heard of sleep hygiene? You know, people talk about the things that we do to help our sleep environment. Not having screens that we're watching right before bed can be really important. And of course, screens are everywhere in our lives. So your phone, your TV, all of that. They talk about how we put kids to bed, right? We have a little routine. You brush your teeth, you use the restroom, you maybe have a drink. Maybe you do that in a different order. Anyway, you know, you read a story, but we don't do that for ourselves necessarily. And then we get to bed having run, and looked at our phone, and then it's like, why can't I fall asleep? So routines can be really important. All sorts of different things in the environment. And then kids and family. If you've got young kids, that can be very difficult to get to sleep. If they're not sleeping. Right, Chokas? Then there are emotional things that keep us awake, right? we've all had those nights, I'm sure, where we're awake thinking of things that we're worried about or anxious about, or our brain is just busy planning, thinking, just holding so much information. Or if you have nightmares or night terrors, that can make it very, very difficult to sleep. And then just things in our lifestyle. We're just a people who overachieve, we're over-responsible, take on more than we should. And we kind of have this desire to be limitless. And that honestly goes back to the Garden of Eden, doesn't it? You know, when Eve took that apple or whatever fruit it was, you know, the serpent said to her, you can be like God. God is limitless. And we have that desire to be limitless and to not accept these limits that God's given us. We override the natural limits that creation provides of when it gets dark at night, we turn on lights so that we can stay awake longer, right? And then there's the good old FOMO, right? The fear of missing out. All the things that might be happening, especially if you look at a lot of social media that I'm missing out on, and that can keep us awake. So there's all kinds of physical, emotional, and lifestyle things that can keep us awake. And perhaps more than any other sermon, it would be so easy to turn this into a self-help sermon, which I don't want to do. I do want to encourage you to do what you need to do to identify and remove the barriers to getting a good night's sleep. Maybe go see your doctor if there's something physical, you've got sleep apnea or pain or whatever. Develop some good sleep hygiene practices. Get some prayer. If you have disturbing nightmares or anxiety, Jerry would be very happy to connect you. I've been saying what awesome prayers we have in this church. You'd be very happy to get some prayer for people, right, Jerry? Yep, he's our prayer ministry leader. So, go to God. Be honest about the desires and motivations that keep you awake when you should be asleep. Ask him to help you develop strategies. So I encourage you to pursue sleep, not just because it's good wellness and wisdom that will benefit your health. We want to pursue sleep because it's part of that abundant life that Jesus offers us. God has some really important stuff to say about sleep. He made sure to talk about it throughout the Bible. But if you look up sleep in the Bible, it uses it more than one way. If you were to take out your electronic Bible and do a word study on sleep, sleep is used as a euphemism for death. When you read about all the kings in the Old Testament, the accounts of their lives always end with so-and-so reigned for X number of years, and so-and-so slept with his fathers. And his son, whatever his son's name was, ruled in his place. That's not the kind of sleep we're talking about today. Sleep's also used as a euphemism for being spiritual unaware, spiritually unaware. Isaiah 29:10 says, "The Lord has brought over you a deep sleep. He has sealed your eyes, prophets. He has covered your heads, seers." And Paul uses similar language to tell us to wake up spiritually and not sleepwalk through life, but to walk fully alive with Christ. He says, "Awake, O sleeper, and arise from the dead, and Christ will shine on you." Being spiritually aware is a great concept, but it's also not what we're talking about today. Sleep is used as a euphemism for Sleep is used as a euphemism for laziness. Proverbs 6, 6 or 11, I'm going to read it in its entirety because it's such a great passage. "Go to the ant, O sluggard, consider his ways and be wise. Without having any chief, officer, or ruler, she prepares her bread in summer and gathers her food in harvest. How long will you lie there, O sluggard? Will you arise from your sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to rest, and poverty will come upon you like a robber and want like an armed man?" Greg used to quote that to me when I slept in on Saturday mornings. He's a morning person. I'm a night person. He thought it was very funny. I didn't. If you're lazy, the Bible tells you not to be. Life will not go well for you if you're lazy and you don't work. And I'm not talking about people who can't work for whatever reason. The Bible had the original system of taking care of people in society who are unable to earn their own living. I'm talking about those who don't want to work. For most of us, the problem isn't laziness. This church is full of faithful, hardworking people. So once again, that's not what we're talking about today. But the Bible does talk about sleep, literally. Oh, there we go. Meaning the hours of shut-eye that we need on a daily basis. That's what we're talking about this morning. as we look at what God says about sleep, we discover that good sleep has a lot to do with trust. We need to be absolutely confident that God sustains our lives. And he does sustain our lives physically. You read Psalm 3, verse 5, it says, I lay down and slept, I woke again, for the Lord sustained me. And I don't know if you've ever had an experience where you were concerned about that. About 12 years ago, my thyroid went nuts. It was an autoimmune thing, and it went off the charts high. And everything, you know, your thyroid is sort of like your body's thermostat, so everything was running fast, you know, and I was overheated all the time. I was eating a ton and losing weight. And I remember going to bed one night, and my heart was just pounding out of my chest, fast and hard, like boom, 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 boom. And I remember, you know, just laying there thinking, God, please wake me up in the morning. I mean, I was scared, not quite scared enough to go to the ER, but definitely scared enough to go to urgent care the next morning, and they found out what was going on. But it was kind of scary, you know, and maybe some of you have had a similar experience where you go to bed really not quite sure if you might wake up in the morning. And, you know, some of your experiences may be more serious than mine. As Christ followers, we can go to sleep trusting that God will protect us. He'll keep us breathing. He'll keep our hearts beating. He designed all those basic life-sustaining things, functions of our body, to continue without us thinking about it. We don't have to remember to breathe. We don't have to tell our heart to beat. So we can go to sleep knowing that he will sustain our bodies. That's how he designed them. And even if he doesn't sustain us physically, he will sustain us eternally. If we don't wake up in our bed on earth, we will wake up with him. So, and he sustains us mentally and spiritually. Psalm 4 verse 8 says, in peace I will both lie down and sleep, for you alone, O Lord, make me dwell in safety. Life isn't always peaceful, is it? Life isn't always safe. So often we can't sleep because our hearts and minds are not at peace. We have concerns, we have worries about finances, relationships, health, career. Sometimes we don't feel quite safe or secure in a lot of different ways, even in our locked houses in relatively peaceful Wisconsin. So if you find that you lie down and you can't sleep because your mind is tied up in knots, or you don't want to go to bed because you know your thoughts will be going a mile a minute, it can be helpful to take a moment right before bedtime to enjoy some of that rest that Jerry was talking about. Maybe just take 5 or 10 minutes and remember who God is. That's right, you're my Father, you love me. Take each one of those concerns and literally give those to him. And remember, I'm your precious child, you care about that even more than I do. Maybe instead of watching the news, which usually just adds to anxiety, or checking social media, which just makes ourselves compare ourselves with other people, or playing electronic games, try spending that time with God and see if he can take those worries and you can rest better. Some great verses that you could meditate on as you do that. Romans 5:1, therefore, since we have been justified by faith, we have peace. We're at peace with God through our Lord Jesus Christ. That's awesome. Hebrews 13:6, so we can confidently say, the Lord is my helper, I will not fear. What can man do to me? The Lord is my helper. My safety isn't in the circumstances of my life. It isn't in the bank. It isn't in my job, in my home, my possessions, my assets. It isn't even in my family and relationships. I'm safe and secure because I'm at peace with God. I can sleep peacefully because God is in charge of all my worries. I know it sounds simplistic, but it's true. And I encourage you to take that swirl of concerns and fears, identify each one. Often writing them down helps. And one by one, hand them over to our amazing God, who's in control of them anyway. It may not feel true, especially initially, but over time, reminding ourselves of the truth does help us believe and feel the truth. Practice may not make perfect, but practice makes peace, and practice makes sleep. In Acts 12, Herod had Peter in prison for being a leader in this new Christian movement that was really stirring things up. The local Christians were all praying for Peter, and God sent an angel to break him out of jail. It's a great story. But what was Peter doing in that story? He was sleeping. He's in jail. He's in prison. And, you know, prisons aren't known for being great sleeping environments even today. And back then, definitely not. He was probably sleeping on a stone, cold, hard floor. He was between two guards. He was in chains. He had chains around his wrists. And he's sleeping. Not exactly a good recipe for a good night's sleep. And perhaps he was really tired. He'd had quite the experience. But all the same, he practically sleepwalked through an angel tapping him on a shoulder and breaking him out and escorting him out of jail, getting the chains off him. You can only sleep that peacefully in such an unsafe and insecure circumstance if you are totally confident in God's presence and ultimate control of everything that's going on. We can also sleep securely when we know and follow God and his ways. Proverbs 3:21-24 says, "My son, do not lose sight of these. Keep sound wisdom and direction, and they will be life for your soul and adornment for your neck. Then you will walk on your way securely, and your foot will not stumble. If you lie down, you will not be afraid. When you lie down, your sleep will be sweet." Sweet. You know, we use that word, but actually, you know, we often have sweet things at the end of a meal, because sweet things are satisfying. They actually they release the hormones as a signal to your brain. You're done eating. You're satisfied, right? Your sleep will be satisfying and sweet. We aren't in control of everything in our lives, are we? Perhaps you feel like you're not in control of very much. But we are in control of our choices and our responses to whatever that it is that life brings our way. We can respond in ways consistent with God's wisdom, or we can react without thinking, kind of a knee-jerk response. The more we know God through reading the Bible, studying it, getting to know him, and the more we live according to his ways, the more we experience security. We come to realize that whatever happens, even if everything seems to fall apart and go south, God is with us. He's got us. What looks like disaster may turn out to be the best gift sometimes. When we know we're secure, we lie down to sleep without the fears crowding in. We can enjoy sweet sleep because we know, as it says in Romans 8:28, oh, I don't have that in there, never mind, that for those who love God, all things work together for good. Not necessarily for easy or idyllic, but for good. So another thing that helps us sleep well is honest work. Ecclesiastes 5:12 says, "Sweet is the sleep of a laborer, whether he eats little or much, but the full stomach of the rich will not let him sleep." We do tend to sleep better when we've been physically active, don't we? Of course, much of our work today involves more brain than muscle, and that's one reason why regular exercise can help us sleep. But I think there's more to this than just sleeping sweeter when we're physically tired. There's something about knowing the value of the work that we do, feeling good about an honest day's work that helps us sleep well. That work might be paid work, it might be household work, it might be raising kids, volunteer work, or it might just be the work of navigating life in the midst of a physical or mental disability. Too often we don't feel good about what we do. Perhaps we feel we should be doing something more. We should have gone to school. We should be doing something more obviously worthwhile. Perhaps we don't measure up to what we expected of ourselves. Or we compare ourselves to other people and feel that we don't measure up to them. Or we feel we're not valued and appreciated in our jobs, that others don't see the value of what we do. Or we sell ourselves short because we don't see any spiritual value in what we do, and we don't feel that what we do matters particularly to God. But that's just all junky thoughts. So feel free to ask God if you're doing what he wants you to do. If the answer is no, then sure, go back to school, get a different job, do what he tells you to do. But if the answer is yes, enjoy the work. As Paul says in 1 Corinthians 10:31, do all to the glory of God. Feel good about your work and come home and enjoy sweet sleep. And another thing that's really important is that God reorders our lives when we sleep. He does this, one of the ways he does it is through dreams. We're told everybody dreams. Some of us remember our dreams, some of us don't. My dreams, honestly, are pretty crazy. It'd be a pretty scary place to live. Sometimes I can pinpoint what my brain was trying to sort out in a particular dream, and sometimes they're just plain strange. But we do know that something important happens somehow when we're sleeping and our brain sorts things out. It's sort of like going through our computer files, putting things in the right folder and putting some things in the trash. Sometimes God uses dreams to speak to us. Sometimes we have a crystal clear dream that we remember when we wake up, and we've got this strong sense, oh, God was speaking to me through that dream. And for some of us who tend to overthink things, it's cool to know that God can speak to us even when we're asleep. And there's loads of Bible stories of God speaking to people in dreams. I put a whole load of references in your outline if you want to look them up. But God uses dreams to warn people, to predict future events, and sometimes he gives dreams to people who really aren't even following him or even who are opposed to him, which is pretty cool, and he uses them in powerful ways. So I'm not going to run through all the examples, but dreams are an important way that God speaks to people and clarifies things, warns people. We do have to be careful how we interpret dreams. The Old Testament is full of warnings about reading into dreams, using dreams that aren't from God to direct affairs in the way that we want. Dreams are probably most useful when they confirm something that God has already been speaking to us. Maybe you dream and you have a really vivid picture that it's like, oh yes, that I hadn't thought of it that way, but that's exactly what God had been showing me. Or you have a dream and it really hits you and you kind of think about it and it sticks with you, and then later on, God makes it clear through other ways what that was about. So they're most useful as sort of part of a big picture, usually. One of the most prolific dreamers that I'm aware of in this church is Darcy. She dreams a lot and with significant dreams. And when she has a dream she thinks is from God, she's very careful not to just read into it, but to get input from other people. So if you think God's speaking to you through a dream, write it down. Speak to an elder or a leader. Talk to Darcy. She's got a lot of experience with this. Ask God to give clarity and confirm what he's speaking to you. So God does reorder our lives through our dreams. That's an important part of sleep. And God also reorders our priorities. You know, when we make a commitment to getting enough sleep, we're forced to examine our priorities. Psalm 127, verses 1 to 2 says, "Unless the Lord builds the house, those who build it labor in vain. Unless the Lord watches over the city, the watchman stays awake in vain. It's in vain that you rise up early and go to bed, go late to rest, eating the bread of anxious toil. For he gives to his beloved sleep." If I trust God to watch over my life while I get the sleep that my mind and body need, I will be in a better place to ask him how to use my hours when I'm awake. I'll be better able to listen to how he wants me to use my time and less prone to spin my wheels with things that might feel productive in the moment but don't accomplish anything significant in the long term. Sarah talked about how when she rests, God gives her strategies, ways to work smarter, direction on what to do and what not to do, ideas to work simpler. When we have a financial gap, I just want to give some examples. It seems obvious to just work more, right? Get a second job, put in more hours. And that may be the solution. Sometimes it is, but not necessarily. God could close that gap a whole ton of ways. Remember how the Israelites' clothes and sandals never wore out while they were wandering in the wilderness for 40 years? Don't you just want some of that shoe leather? Especially if your favorite shoes were made of that, that'd be great. God can still do that. He can protect your car from needing expensive repairs. He can keep your appliances working. He can reduce your expenses. Craig and I have experienced that many times. Or when we aren't climbing the ladder at work the way that we'd like, it's easy to just put in more hours, try harder, take work home, and that might help, but not necessarily, and we may end up just climbing a ladder that God never intended us to climb. When we want to give our kids the very best in life, and who doesn't want to do that? It's easy to fill up the calendar with activities to make sure that they build a well-rounded resume of academics, athletics, music, and the arts. But does eating dinner in the car every night on the way to the next activity really prepare them for the life that God created them to live? We need to ask God how he wants to meet our financial needs and what role he wants us to play in that, in increasing income or reducing expenses. We need to be purposeful in putting in the hours God calls us to put in at work. Sometimes that might mean overtime. Sometimes it might mean asking for more vacation instead of a raise. Right, Lisa? And we need to weigh before God what activities will help our kids live the abundant lives that God has for them and what will just make the schedule crazy. We can trust him with all those good opportunities that they might miss that he knows that they just don't need. So let's reorder our priorities so we have time for sleep. And here's the really good news. When we come down to it, Psalm 121 has the key for us to hold on to. Verses 3 and 4 say, "He will not let your foot be moved. He who keeps you will not slumber. Behold, he who keeps Israel will neither slumber nor sleep." This is fundamental to us getting enough sleep. We each need to know very personally God is awake and alert and watching out for us 24/7. Even when he rested on the seventh day after creation, God wasn't asleep. He's always vigilant. He's always ready to protect his precious children. And I don't know if we ever really completely arrive in knowing this. As humans, we like to take good things too far. It's good to take responsibility for our behavior, for our responses, but it's easy to start thinking that we're responsible for everything that's actually beyond our control. I personally find it hard to go to bed if the day's work isn't finished, whatever that day's work is. If there are still emails to send, a meeting to plan, a sermon to work on, dishes to wash, laundry to fold, and I tend to want to pack more into my days than I should. I put it all on my calendar. If you look at my calendar, it's all color-coded, and it's all there. And I feel like I have to stay up until whatever's on the calendar for that day is done. It's just kind of the way that I'm wired. I had to restrict Facebook to just checking it once or twice a month because I started to feel I had to keep up on everyone's lives. There's something really profound about accepting that I don't have to do it all. It's humbling to realize that if I don't do it and it doesn't get done, it probably didn't matter that much anyway. I don't have to stay on top of everything because God is on top of everything. I don't have to stay awake when I should be asleep. I can leave the project unfinished. I can turn off the computer. I can leave the dishes in the sink and the laundry in the basket, and I can just go to bed. Ultimately, I can sleep because God is always awake and always watching out for me. The thing to remember is that sleep is something God wants to give us as a gift he doesn't want us to take lightly. Remember the end of Psalm 127, "For he gives to his beloved sleep." So I encourage you to actively receive the gift of sleep. Consider the things that keep you from getting enough sleep on a regular basis and ask God to help you find solutions. Some problems may not have solutions. We do live in a broken world, and sometimes unless God does a miracle, we have to learn to live with less sleep, a less than perfect life, at least for a season sometimes. But even then, as you ask God for the strength to cope with sleep deprivation, don't give up asking him for that season to end and to help you get a full night's sleep, so that you can live that abundant life that he intends for you when you're awake. So we're going to take communion, and here's what we're going to do. There's 3x5 cards in your bulletin. If you don't have them, the ushers will bring them to you, and a pen. And so I want you to take that 3x5 card and just take a moment quietly and ask God three questions. Is God calling you to sleep more? If so, what keeps you awake? And then what do you need to address so you can sleep more. So write down anything God shows you on your card, and then what I'm going to invite you to do is to leave it here in this container at the foot of the cross, just as a symbolic act of leaving it with Jesus. And then you can come and take communion. If you're someone who gets plenty of sleep, please don't feel pressure to write something down, to manufacture something. Just thank God for the gift of sleep. Forget the 3x5 card thing and take communion. That's fine. But if you struggle to get enough sleep, or know you don't get enough sleep, ask God what he wants you to do about that. Nobody's going to read what you write. I will get the shredder right after the service, and they will all go through. It's between you and Jesus. So here's how this is going to work. The communion servers are going to come first, and then the worship. And so it'll be silent, because then the worship team's going to come up after them, and then they'll start to play, and the rest of us can come take communion. And maybe if two of the servers could stand on the other side of the cross, that'd be great. Then people can go both directions. So, all of you who have accepted Jesus' offer of salvation for our sin and the abundant life now and eternity are welcome to come and take communion. The bread symbolizes God's provision for us, this morning his provision of sleep, and the cup symbolizes the abundant life that Jesus offers us. So I'm going to pray, and then I'll lead us into communion. God, thank you that you are not a taskmaster. As a father, you give to your beloved children sleep. Thank you that we can receive the gift of sleep, knowing that you are awake and alert, and our Heavenly Father is watching out for us. And God, I pray that this morning that you would speak clearly, that there wouldn't be guilt and shame, but that there would be clarity over, for especially for those of us who struggle to get enough sleep, that you would speak very specifically as to how you want us to move towards receiving that gift of sleep that you want to give us. God, we want to live that abundant life that you intended for us, that Jesus was talking about. We want to live. We don't want to settle for anything less than everything that you intended for us. And we know we need sleep. So God, would you help us? You know the places where we struggle. You know the things that make it difficult for us to sleep. Thank you that we can trust you to show us the ways that you want to give us more of that abundant life. So the Lord Jesus, on the night when he was betrayed, he took bread, and after he'd given thanks, he broke it and said, "This is my body broken for you, for the forgiveness of sins." And in the same way, after supper, he took the cup and said, "This is the new covenant in my blood. Do this whenever you drink it in remembrance of me." So take a moment with God to write on your card, and then we'll go into communion.